Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
He joins us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He covers the Browns for the Chronicle Telegram, brownzone.com, where you can read all of his work. He's Mr. Scott Petrak. Hello, sir.
Hello, Scotty.
What's going on, fellas?
Are you hitting them yet?
I'm walking to the practice green as we speak, and I saw a Springsteen cover band Friday night.
Wow. Well, see what happens when the work goes away?
I'm pretty on brand.
That's awesome. I'm very happy.
I
for
love
you.
Cover bands. Because they always take like one song and that becomes the name of their. What was that? What's the name of the cover band? Hungry Heart or something like that?
Bruce in the USA.
Ah,
nice.
That's a good name.
That's not a bad way to go. Not a bad way to go. Well, we'll let you warm up in about 12 minutes if that's okay with you.
Yeah, I got time.
All right, good. The dust has settled a little bit. Did anything strike you after everybody said, hey, great, we'll see you at training camp, about what you saw at minicamp?
I mean, it's the same things we've been discussing. It's the quarterbacks. It's what are you going to do at receiver? I thought DeJuan Jones, him being able to be healthy and in better shape was a good sign because they need him to play left tackle at a high level. But it's a lot about the quarterbacks and receivers. Right? For a team that was last in the league, in points last year, how are they going to figure out a way to manufacture some this year?
That's a good question. So let me ask you this one. We keep seeing national folks like crazy talking about Shedeur Sanders. And every time I saw it, I thought, okay, are you not past the pre-draft hype that had him as a first-round pick? do you have sources that are telling you incredible things about this guy and what might be happening, or are you not watching mandatory minicamp and seeing that he might not be getting the reps that everybody else and clearly looks like the fourth guy, even though he's done well? What is it, Scott?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it all comes down to the popularity factor. Shedeur Sanders is a popular guy, and all you have to do is be on social media for a minute and tweet something about him or put out a video about him. It gets a ton of traction. So I think that drives some of it, some of the discussion. I do think that, obviously, I think he's better than a fifth-round pick. Was he first-round pick? No. So I think there is some lingering residue from that when we talk about why he gets discussed so much. But it's it's the famous part. It's his dad's a Hall of Famer, one of the best NFL players of all time. Now, the other part of the discussion is I thought he looked really good. I mean, I've seen him practice 7 times, and I thought he practiced well all 7 times I saw him. And I think he throws it really well and accurately, and the ball placement's good, and I thought his decision-making was good. Now, that's not the end-all, be-all, because, he's not with the first-team offense. He's not going against the first-team defense. I don't know if his footwork is good enough. I don't know if he's getting guys in and out of the huddle fast enough, those kinds of things. Is he reading the defense right? But just from a purely throwing the ball standpoint, I thought he did better. I thought he did the best of the 4 quarterbacks. That doesn't mean he's ready, but it could generate some excitement, I think, when the fans get to see him at training camp.
Do you think the coaching staff was able to solidify any spot for any of the 4 quarterbacks that say, okay, and I know what you're saying about Shedeur, but is it easy for them to say, you know what, we've got other quarterbacks here, let's let Shedeur learn this pro game a little bit more? Because I if they throw him out there for week 1 as a starter, I don't know how that changed. And he's going to have to. The pressure on him would be insane. It'd be insane.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't even know if I could put a percentage, any kind of percentage, on that happening, where he'd be your week 1 starter. I don't think that means he can't pass Dylan Gabriel to be second or third, depending on if they keep both veterans. But there's a big learning curve for Shedeur Sanders. He didn't call plays in the huddle. It was all hurry up at Colorado. He's got a lot to learn, and that's why he was clearly the 4th quarterback in the rotation. He didn't get any work with the ones. A lot of times he was on that second field when Even the other three guys were on the first field. So I don't think there's any chance, or, you know, I hate to be absolute. I think there's a really, really, really small chance that he's got any, that he will even be in the discussion to be the starting quarterback. That doesn't mean he can't impress people, and I think he has impressed people. But as far as the other three guys go, Andy, I don't think anything is set in stone at all. We talked about how I think they want Kenny Pickett to be the starter week one because they want to get a look at him. He's young enough to be the long-term answer. And I don't. There's no way you could say that coming out of minicamp that he solidified the starting job. And if I had to, you know, if I had to put something on it, I would say Joe Flacco closed whatever gap there was, because I think there's a trust factor with Joe Flacco that he gives you the best chance to win when you play the Bengals and Joe Burrow in week one.
I just think, barring injury, one of those three guys is getting traded. There's going to be another team that's going to need somebody. Hopefully it's not us, right? And yeah, someone's going to need one of those three to go somewhere to be either a number two, or, you know, if you're Joe or even Kenny, if you lose your starter and you want to bring somebody else in that maybe knows your – I just – doesn't it feel like one of those guys is getting traded?
Well, I think that's the plan. I don't know if it's one of three guys. I don't think they're getting rid of one of the rookies. I just don't.
You.
I think
yep.
down to two.
You know, I mean, I don't know if there's a market for Sanders. Plus, I think they probably like him, given what I just said about how I think he's looked, and we know they like Gabriel. So I think it's one of the two veterans could be traded. I don't know if there's a market for either of those guys. I think you're right. It would depend on injuries. Maybe it depends on what happens in New Orleans and, you know, how they handle the loss of Derek Carr. And, you know, I know they have Tyler Shuck now, but if he's not ready, do they come looking for a guy who needs a backup? We saw the Browns play this game the last couple of years. You know, they traded Joshua Dobbs, and then they tried to trade Tyler Huntley last year, right? And they weren't able to do that. They did trade Dobbs the year before. So I think that is their plan. But right now, I don't know if they would – I don't know if they know who they would prefer to trade. I think that's a ways out, and I certainly don't think you can dictate your starting quarterback week one based on who other teams want to trade for. Oh, okay, we'll take Joe. Okay, we'll start Kenny in Cleveland. I mean, that's not the way to pick your starting quarterback.
Scott Petrak joining us, Chronicle-Telegram, BrownZone.com. You mentioned DeJuan Jones. How did he look to you? And what if he's not ready to go? What if something happens there? Do you think they have a backup plan in place that they can live with and succeed with?
I think physically he'll look great. You know, you don't get, it's hard to tell in, you know, mini campaign. There's no contact, so it's not really pass rush. It's not one-on-one. So that part's hard to tell. Physically, he looks really good. I think he's focused and knows that he has to be the guy at left tackle. I think their plan is Cornelius Lucas, who's been in the league for a long time. He's a big dude. I mean, you know, DeJuan Jones is a big guy. So is Cornelius Lucas. He's not as heavy is Jones, but I think he's almost the same height, if not
six,
the same
eight,
height.
6'8", 325.
Yeah, right. So it's 6'8", 374, and 6'8", 325. So you notice him out on the field. I think he would be the guy. You know, Tevin Jenkins has versatility, but I feel like they want him to play guard. And Lucas would be the first guy up at tackle, whether it's Conklin or Jones, you know, can't be ready to go week one.
Let's go to the other side of the ball. What impression did Mason Graham leave on the coaches and everybody else, his new teammates?
Yeah, you know, again, it's so hard with no pads on for defensive linemen, but they see him working behind the scenes. And I thought that was one of the key things Jack Cesare, the D-line coach, talked about. He's like, I talked to Mason a million times before the draft. Once you get him in the building, you see, okay, see the guy that shows up early every day, see the guy that stays late, all those intangibles you're looking for. And he just raved about Mason Graham. And they are huge believers that the Jim Schwartz system is going to unlock something in Mason Graham that he didn't even show at Michigan. Now, you know, obviously that remains to be seen, but they're really optimistic about that. And that if they just say, hey, quit reading blocks, quit taking on double teams, and go attack, that he penetrated anyway, even when that wasn't his main focus at Michigan. So, you know, you have Michael Jr., who we haven't seen because he's still coming off the knee injury. Obviously you have Miles. That's right. You got Joe Tryon, Choyinka. You got Malik Collins, the D-tackle free agent that took over for kind of swap places with Dalvin Tomlinson after he got cut to save money. He had a couple batted passes on Wednesday, I think it was. So they have some depth there, but for this D-line to take the next step, it's got to be Mason Graham has a huge impact right away.
And one thing that cracks me up about Mason Graham and some of the things that you've read and seen, he doesn't have a Myles Garrett type of body. And people are, I've read some stuff. The guy doesn't look blah, 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 blah. None of that matters, Scott, if you get out on the field and play. And as a guy who is a wrestler and what he did in school at Michigan, I just keep thinking, could you just let the guy go play some football before we make any judgments, please?
Yeah, I think that's really fair, Jeff. Now, he doesn't have that body.
Nope.
But I don't think it matters at that position. And does he have the quickness that's required? Yes. Does he have the power? They think so, and I'm not going to argue. And he's got quick hands. And those things are most important for the wrestling background is also key, like you referenced. I mean, it's a five-yard thing, right? He's playing inside this telephone booth, and you need quickness and a burst. And he has it, and I'm not sure it matters if, you're not the most chiseled guy in the world.
Yeah, let me throw out the name Michael Dean Perry. Michael didn't look like Myles Garrett. Wouldn't you take another Michael Dean Perry in the middle of that defensive line?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And, there's a million other examples of that in this league. And I'm trying to say, Aaron Donald was thin and cut. He had a great body. But, Dalvin Tomlinson didn't have a great body.
No.
And Mason Graham, I would say, is built a little different. And I think he's more of a penetrator even than Tomlinson was. And, they had the failed experiment with Siaki Ika a couple years ago and tried to take a guy who was, probably better fit to be a nose tackle that really took up bodies. That's what he was better at. And they tried to change him into that attacker and it didn't work. I think Graham physically is in a much better spot to do that than either of those other guys were. And I think he can have, Dalvin Thomas played well in 2 years, right? He was just a salary cap casualty, but I think the ceiling for Mason Graham is higher than that for Dalvin Tomlinson.
Scott, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about the defensive backfield at all. And, you've got your story with Denzel Ward out there. What insight do you have on Denzel going into this next season?
Well, I think it's important to remember he had the best year of his career last year, and he feels that way. He only had two interceptions, which that's the focus of his whole goals for 2025 is to have more interceptions. But he also had half of the team's four, which just shows you how bad the team was creating takeaways and really put him behind the eight ball, especially given the fact that they were turning it over a ton on offense. So he's coming off a great year. He played a career-high 16 games, which for a lot of his career, people wanted to rip Denzel because he was hurt. He would just miss a couple games here and there, and people picked on that. We played 16 last year at a super high level. But as Jim Schwartz said, how do you go from Pro Bowl to All-Pro? And it's turning those pass breakups into interceptions. And Denzel led the league with 19 passes defense last year, but only with two picks. And that's where he needs to take a jump if he's going to be considered in that, the same realm as the best corners in the league. Because I think he's close there, but I don't think anybody says, oh, yeah, Denzel is a top first or second corner. And I think from a talent perspective, he can be in that discussion. But how you get that recognition is by taking the ball away. And if your best or second best player on defense can do that, and that's the goal for 2025, then it changes the whole scope of the defense and even the whole team. Because you're taking away possessions, you're giving your offense more possessions, hopefully on a short field. And if you just flip the turnover ratio from last year to this year, then I think the Browns win two or three more games just based on that.
Hit him straight, my friend.
I'll try.
Scott Petrek, BrownZone.com, Chronicle Telegram. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Scott.
Scott joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline and on the golf course.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
That's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. Good to have Scott Petrek with us moments ago before he teed it up, hit it straight, which is good. Scott talking about Shedeur Sanders looking in his eyes as good, if not better, than any of the quarterbacks at mandatory minicamp, which is fascinating. Also saying he has a really long way to go, which is not an understatement, I think. And
isn't that fair for any rookie? Like,
I think that's very
fair. The biggest pet peeve of the 13 years we've been talking about since we got here is the day that a team drafts a quarterback. Oh, they got to start the next game. No, they don't. They don't. They just don't. So give these guys a little bit of time, and we'll see how it plays out. Even guys that get drafted number one overall, I still wonder about teams that throw them out there the first game of the season. I don't think those guys are ready.
I would agree with that. The situation, though, is pretty clear. You have two veteran quarterbacks. You have two rookie quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Which one's the guy? I don't know. Which one's going to be the guy? I don't know. Do they know? Maybe.
I think they're going to let it play out at camp. I still think that they probably have their own depth chart, and it's there, and no one else is going to see it. And it's Kevin's depth chart. It's probably in his mind. Him and Andrew probably have something written down, and that's about the end of it, and you go from there.
We've talked about this, Andy. You bring in Pickett of these guys, if it means anything, in order. He was the first one. And then you sign Flacco, and then you draft two guys. And Dylan Gabriel was brought in before Shedeur Sanders, and Shedeur getting lots of hype, and obviously popularity has something to do with that. Ability has something to do with it, too. So if you can't figure it out, and you like all four of these guys because you brought them all in, could you possibly keep four quarterbacks? Or at least try to figure out how to keep four quarterbacks for an extended period of time or a little period of time, and maybe you move one or whatever. The idea of having one of the veterans with two rookies backing him up, I don't find very appealing, unless one of those rookies shows that he could actually step on a football field this year and play for you. So that's a possibility. I would be stunned if they let one of the rookies go, because those are lottery tickets. Until you determine they can't play, why would you do that?
Jeff, if somebody offered you a first or second rounder for Dylan Gabriel, you'd take it, though, wouldn't you?
I'm sorry, Andy. What did you drink this morning?
I'm not saying that would ever happen, but if someone got desperate during camp, lose your starting quarterback.
That's not going to happen, though.
Somebody offers you a second rounder for Dylan Gabriel because they really wanted him and they made a mistake and they think they should have taken him. Anything that would be an upgrade up from third round, wouldn't you do it?
We've had the story about Miami perhaps wanting to trade for Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah.
And the reports about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like buying a new car. You drive it off the lot and the value drops.
I don't know. Has he been off the lot? He just has a helmet.
Oh, he's off the lot.
He just has a helmet that goes.
He's off the lot. Until you play and show that you're worth more, your value's down. I mean, nobody's going to trade you more than what you drafted him for unless you go on the field and you play and you do something that's really good. Jeremy Fowler covers the NFL for ESPN, did cover the Browns for ESPN for a while. He was on with the morning guys. That would be Kenneth and Antonio.
Or Anthony,
yeah. Antonio, I like the name Antonio. Lyman could pull off Antonio, don't you think?
No.
Anyhow, Jeremy was on the show. And the guys were talking to him about the quarterback, and you're going to cut one, you're going to keep them all, you're going to trade them. What might happen here with the quarterbacks? And I think Fowler's response is kind of interesting.
Now, it does seem like there's a little more momentum lately for them potentially keeping four quarterbacks. Coming out of the draft, it was reminded to me that, like, hey, Cleveland, they value players like currency and tradable assets, right? So if you have four quarterbacks and somebody performs well in the preseason, or you showcase somebody to perform well in the preseason, maybe you can trade a piece, and then you have three quarterbacks. But there's a scenario where they can keep four, or maybe they can stash one on the practice squad. Like, there are a lot of things you can do. It seems like they are at least open to those options at this point.
Let me ask either one of you. Do you think either one of the rookies are going to go to the practice squad? Do you think either one of them would make it through to the practice squad?
I have a hard time believing that, but possible.
There's no way. I don't think either one of those guys is clearing waivers.
Nope.
What about Pickett?
I think the best chance might be Joe Pickett. Flacco.
I think Flacco might be the best chance, too.
Yeah.
To get to the practice squad?
Yeah, I think Flacco might be the one who makes it to the practice squad out of all of them.
Joe is sitting out there for a very long time, Andy.
we have a different view of Joe Flacco than I think the league does.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Mm.
Joe is out there unemployed for a very long time.
I really?
Yeah. If you're the Browns and you're hoping to find a long-term possibility at quarterback, well, you wouldn't expose Pickett, Sanders, or Gabriel unless they showed they stunk. And I don't think they're going to do that. I think at the very least they're going to show, wonder if we can develop this guy. And Joe, you know exactly what you're going to get. And if the three young guys all show, we might have something here, but we're not sure, then I don't know why you would move on from them.
Do you completely understand the rules of the practice squad for veterans?
Kind of.
I'm just looking really through it because this is where I get caught up. It says,
I mean, he can refuse, can he not?
Yeah, but I thought at one point if you accrued too many years, you weren't allowed to be on the practice squad, but I think they changed that rule, so I don't know. I keep looking through the rules, but I guess. If you were Joe Flacco, then wouldn't you retire before that happens?
Why? He said he wants to keep playing.
On the practice squad? I don't think he wants
to. Well, if you're,
I mean, it's almost like keeping around to be a coach.
If you retire, you're not going to be able to play.
Why would you give up?
If you're on somebody's practice squad, you could always get claimed.
Why would you give up a guaranteed $5 million?
Thank you.
They could just pay you out and call it a day.
Well, why would they?
But they'd put you on the practice squad to begin with. I mean, it's like the Matt Ryan going to TV thing. It's like, I'm not retiring. I'm collecting a paycheck off of them. They just told me not to play.
Do you really see Joe Flacco going to the practice squad? Think about that.
If I thought that Shedeur Sanders, Dillon Gabriel, or Kenny Pickett might be able to play and be serviceable either as my starter or as my number one backup, I'm not going to expose one of those guys to waivers and try and lose them, Andy.
Joe, there's no way Joe's going to the practice squad. They'll end up, someone's going to have something go wrong during camp.
Maybe.
And he would go get, I would take a trade to go be a number two somewhere
else. But then Jeremy Fowler just says, rumblings now, it's starting to grow momentum that they could try and keep all four guys.
Which I could also 100% see.
Right.
I mean, it's.
You're going to give up an active player spot so you can have two quarterbacks on the inactive list on game day?
Yes.
How many wins do you think this team's going to have this year?
There's the point.
Don't you want to see what somebody else can do rather than having two quarterbacks sitting off on game day?
Somebody...
Is the bottom of your roster really going to save your roster?
Exactly. Do I need to have somebody there that can cover kicks for me, or do I want another lottery ticket at quarterback?
52.
I'd rather have the quarterback.
If the solution to your woes is 52 and 53 on this roster, you have
trouble.
A lot of woes.
Yep,
I just can't see any NFL team keeping four quarterbacks.
Well, neither can I, but can you, how many NFL teams?
Other than on a practice squad, so you would keep three on the regular and then one on the practice. I just don't.
But Andy, I don't think your rookies are going to be able to do that. So you might try to juggle it for a little while. And if you try to juggle it for a little while and you end up, then that's just what you do. I mean, the team won three games last year and didn't have a quarterback.
I guess. I mean, if you want to have one of your drafted guys if you want to have your first round or your second round, third round. I'm just trying to think. If you're taking away spots, now you're asking other guys to move into special teams. I'm just saying.
So?
I mean, Bubba Ventrone's been screaming how he wants more starters and special teams to begin with.
There you go.
Yeah, and then when they get hurt, you'll be saying to yourself, okay, why did we lose our linebacker?
They play football.
Because we had to have four quarterbacks on the active roster. You have no idea how silly that sounds.
It
sounds incredibly stupid.
Andy, I'm not here to try to justify it. I'm just telling you what they're going to do.
We're not the guys who drafted people in the third and the fifth round of quarterback.
The logic,
just because Jeremy Fowler says they're trying to figure out a way doesn't mean they're trying to.
I've been throwing that out since they drafted all these guys and signed Flacco.
I have said the same exact thing as Mr. Phelps. That they're going to keep all four of these guys on this roster, because if they put any of them on the practice squad, they're going to get snatched. The one who probably has the lowest odds to get snatched
is Joe Flacco.
I will buy lunch for you two if they keep all four quarterbacks. If all four of these quarterbacks are on the opening day roster, I will buy lunch for both of you guys. They're no way
going
to have four.
June 16th.
They're not going to have four quarterbacks. They have the four quarterbacks that are on this roster right now.
I would say it's unlikely, except for one thing.
So you don't accept the bet. That's what you're saying.
Oh, you didn't say we'd have to buy you.
Oh, no, I want steak. So
I want steak.
I do.
I'm Andy Baskin. I won't just have like a sandwich.
No, I'm sure just because when I'm right, steak. I like to gloat.
I'm sure there's a $5.99 sirloin out there. We can get them.
We didn't say they're going to keep all four. What I don't, the thought to me is this, Andy. You drafted Dylan Gabriel in the third round. Well, you're not going to run the risk of losing him. Sanders falls to everybody in the fifth round. The Browns are the team that actually made a move and traded up to get him. Well, you're not going to try and cut him loose either, I wouldn't imagine. And Pickett, you made a trade for. Not a great trade, but Pickett, by all accounts, might be the most viable starting quarterback at the beginning of the season. Why would you expose any of those guys? That leaves Flacco, and Joe is the guy who clearly has had the most success in the NFL.
Yeah, so, and let me throw this at you, too. If you're Kevin Stefanski, and you've got these four guys standing in front of you, you've got one football, and you say, I need you to start against Cincinnati, and by the way, in the back of my mind, I might be out of here if I don't have a decent season. Who do you trust?
Whichever guy shows me in training camp is the guy that I should trust.
If you ask me, I'm telling you, Flacco's the guy I'm handing the ball to if I'm Stefanski. I'm not saying that's the greatest move. I'm not saying that that's going to win you games. But from a confidence level and from an experience level and a history level, Flacco's the guy I'm handing the ball to game one. I'm not saying he's going to make it to game two, but I'm saying game one, Flacco. If I'm Kevin Stefanski, because I got to worry about my job and all my other coaches that are with me.
I think we are missing the forest through the trees on this. What is the overarching goal of the 2025-26 Browns season?
Well, if you tell me it's to suck so that they can draft another quarterback, I'm just going to be
Andy.
Furious.
You said one of the words in that statement, it's to walk out of this year knowing, do we need a quarterback or do we have a quarterback? That's the goal. The goal of the 2025-26 season, do we have a quarterback or do we need a quarterback?
Do you realize how disheartening it is to walk into a season?
That's why you keep all four. But the one who might not
we're expecting to lose. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
I cannot. That is such a horrible
answer a question.
Horrible philosophy.
What do you want me to tell you? This is the reality. This is reality. I'm sorry that it hurts.
Reality.
But it is the reality of the mess that you got yourself into with the Deshaun Watson contract and shoving all of the chips in the middle of the table.
He's right.
This is it. The credit card bill is due. You are looking down at it and going, honey, we're not going on vacation this year.
It drives me. It makes me sick.
I'm
straight out sick that you would think that you would walk into a regular season going, man, we're going into this thing knowing we're going to lose. At least put your foot in the water and try to win a couple of games early on so you can build a little momentum moving into the future. Best case scenario, your quarterback of the future is on this team right now. You don't have to waste any more draft picks next year in the first round on another stupid quarterback. Make it work now. Make it work now. I'm tired of waiting. I'm going to be dead before they win.
Gosh, I hope not.
We all feel that way. I'm so tired of it.
Eat less
steak. How do you go into a season thinking we're going to suck?
I'm not ready for Ann Phelps here on The Fan.
It feels like we're going that way.
It's Baskin and Phelps, at least for now on The Fan.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
That's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. Dan Menigan is our producer extraordinaire and also a man who wasn't here on Friday. But he still sent us pictures and he called in.
Yeah.
And might have, you know, violated things by calling play-by-play on the practice tee.
That's not a violation.
Yeah, I know. I just thought I'd throw that out.
Wow. Yeah. He's just so. Keep going.
Dan kept holding up one finger at me, and I thought it was just because he was taking one more swing.
Yeah. I thought Dan did a great job when he called in.
He did do a good job.
Yeah.
He always does.
Dan was at the U.S. Open at Oakmont Country Club on Friday when the weather was perfect before it got really nasty later on. Great. Thank you for calling. That was great fun.
Of course, of course.
Thanks for waving at all the people driving by on the turnpike.
That's what we do. We gave a couple of the signs of the truckers to honk a few times, too.
Very and did cool. they honk?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. There were a couple occasions, especially the one that stands out to me was so like 8 is probably 10 yards from the turnpike.
Yeah.
I would say give or take. And Jordan Spieth was lining up a putt and there were truckers just blaring their horns. And I'm not 100% sure, but I also think it's because you had a couple of people who decided to give the old school bus treatment to him of, you know, going down the school bus nice. And everybody pulling the horn.
Yep. Nice. Love it.
Yep. I had a feeling that happened a couple times.
J.J. Spaun, the winner of the U.S. Open. Congratulations to him. The conditions stunk, and we were kicking this around before the show. I agree with Dan. Dan had said, and yesterday there was standing water, and Sam Burns looked for a ruling and said, hey, look, can I get a drop out of this? There's, squishing, I'm standing in water. He didn't get a drop.
Oh, poor baby.
Spaun bogeyed 5 of his first 6 holes yesterday.
Yeah, he did.
And wins the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I love it.
Only guy under par.
Love it.
That to me is kind of a fascinating thing. And early on in the round, he had, was it the second hole? He bounced an approach shot from about 90 yards. It hit the stick, spun back, and rolled 50 yards off the green. So he basically advanced this ball about 40 yards after it hit the stick because it just kept rolling back, and he made bogey there. That's a bad break from the golf gods, but let's be fair. On the back 9, when he's trying to win the U.S. Open, dude made a 40-foot putt. Thank you, golf gods.
Yes.
And then made a 65-foot putt on 18 to lock it up.
Oh, it was awesome.
Good putting is when you're dropping every 10-footer, you're dropping every 15-footer, you're dropping 20-footers. When you have a 40-foot putt, when you have a 65-foot putt, good luck. If that goes in, that's a break from the golf gods. You're trying to get it within, like a 2-foot circle of the cup, 3-foot circle. If you can do that, congratulations. That's really good. So, though he had a terrible break early on, little wink from the golf gods on the back 9 there, Andy.
Do you get a better break than when the guy you're playing with hits it just about, 2 inches away from where you're going to be putting? I mean, he could not have been able to go to school better than he was. I mean, still, that's a 64-foot putt.
65-foot putt.
Yeah. So that was amazing. I think the big winner yesterday is Oakmont. Like, I'm so tired of listening to you two whine. It was raining. It shouldn't have been playing. Oh, I'm getting wet.
I think we whined for about 30 seconds
and it
just
was 30
right there,
seconds,
didn't we, Dan?
Too long there. And the 75 seconds that you took up during our conference call this morning was also too long. I mean, come on.
Why don't you just go shave, man?
No, I'm not shaving. I love everything that we watched yesterday. I love the fact that there were 7 players who all had a shot from like 12 in to end yesterday on the final 5 holes, and you just didn't know what was going to happen. Then you put the gods in there and you make it rain on Pittsburgh. I love every second of that because you make the course harder. You've got one person under par for the entire weekend with that many players. Come on, man. The course wins. We win. If you're watching final round action on Sunday, you were a winner. And when J.J. Spaun hits a 64-yard birdie putt to win, then picks up his daughter on Father's Day to go sign the card, he's crying. It's amazing. I thought it was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And I don't want to hear you guys whine. Who's raining?
We're not whining.
Dan specifically said they should have stopped playing yesterday and finished it today.
Well, they did stop playing for a while.
Come on, there is nothing worse than watching Monday golf after a really exciting Sunday where there was action and it was intensity and the gallery was into it. And then you have to come back on Monday morning because they said, well, it rained too much. You couldn't play in the courts anymore.
Well, the course,
and there's like 6 people there, 7 people, and people are eating hot dogs that were there from the day before because they were left in the water.
And they're like, oh, okay, you can get a hot dog here. It's leftover from yesterday. Oh, it doesn't matter. I'm hungry.
Of course, that's what they
would say. I mean, the USGA was offering refunds to anybody who didn't want to come because it was too muddy and crummy.
Oh, that's sad. Tough enough. I expect more out of Pittsburgh than that. I thought they were a tough, hardworking steel town like us. Now, oh, it's raining. I can't go watch. Yes, you can. Go watch the elements. It's part of the game.
People weren't asking. The USGA did that voluntarily.
Doesn't matter.
When you're hitting drives and then having to take drops because the drives are falling into puddles, you probably need to give it 24 hours.
Oh, just pick the just squeegee it off. They should have squeegees out there.
Dan, what did you think of the course? You were there on Friday when it was nice.
Long. What blew me away was the fact that there is no water on there. There are no trees anywhere outside of down the first and then off to the, you know, the side. But in the course itself, there are no trees.
And you can see that because, yeah. I mean, you can, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you're elevated, you can basically see the entire golf course, correct?
Yes.
Which is kind of a link-style course, which is what Mr. Phones back in the day when he wanted to build this course decided he wanted, which is weird to see no trees in, you know, our part of the country.
A lot of hills as well. I don't know.
There was a lot of hills.
They did a decent job showing it on TV a little bit. Yeah. It was hills. Like, I'm not in the best shape. Let's not lie to ourselves here, but I'm in decent enough shape. I woke up on Saturday and like my calves and Achilles and that stuff were hurting from having to climb up and down hills all day. You know, just walking through the entire course. It is a golf course that, and this is going to sound really stupid, it is a golf course that is built to play golf. It is not a golf course that is built to watch golf. I will say that for sure.
Hmm.
It is not a golf course that is built for people to congregate in certain areas. There aren't those natural amphitheater type of situations right.
It's
into.
It's not Muirfield is what you're saying.
It's not Muirfield. It's not Augusta. It is a golf course that is built to play golf. It is not the best for watching golf.
One thing that I admire about the U.S. Open, and, you know, you see players sometimes complain about things. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think we heard too much complaining about the difficulty of the course. There was some. But the only guy under par was the winner, yep. J.J. Spaun. And I think that's perfectly okay. You know, when anybody goes out, when most of us go out and play golf, if you're anywhere close to par, you think you've had a really good round. And these guys are, you know, these guys are the best players in the world. Shouldn't they be challenged?
Agree. I love it.
I love U.S. Open layouts because they make it very challenging. Wide open fairways for these guys who can bomb it, you know, what, 320, 340, whatever they bomb it these days, and whatever they care to bomb it. And then if you miss, you know, if you miss your second shot, but you get an easy lie. Well, that's not the idea. These guys are so good. I don't need to see them shoot 18 under par. To me, that's not very entertaining. So let's see them be challenged. And I give the USGA a lot of credit for that because they've never really backed off on that. And that's great. Everybody's playing the same course. And if you can fight through, and yesterday, Andy, congratulations to you, the elements.
I love it.
As well. Yeah. Really tough course.
I mean,
tough
you want elements, to be a champion, do exactly what he did yesterday.
Yeah,
and rebound from a horrible front nine.
A terrible start.
Oh, it's awesome.
Terrible start. But I like the idea that the best players in the world are challenged with a very difficult layout. And whether that be Oakmont or Bethpage Black or, you know, wherever they want to play, when you put it out there and you make it difficult, well, that's good. These guys are the best players in the world. And there's nothing wrong with shooting par. You know, we don't need to see them shoot 20 under par, do we?
No, I hate it. I can't stand it.
It's not as entertaining.
I was looking at the list for the College Championship out at Firestone coming
like
up.
A drive and a wedge for these guys. It's like, well, why are we even bothering?
Do you remember, didn't Vijay Singh win like at 22 under one time at Firestone? Vijay Singh had like some amazing...
I don't recall.
He did, yeah. I'm just trying to remember what it was. It was, and you know, I mean, if it's birdie after birdie after birdie after birdie after birdie, it's like, okay, I get it. The course isn't hard enough for these guys.
The one thing about golf today, I wonder, the USGA puts together a tough layout, obviously. They make a tough course even tougher, you know, with the long grass and fast greens and the length and holes. If I'm not mistaken, Oakmont usually plays to a par of 71. They took a stroke away, played to a par of 70, and that's okay. I think you either, especially for the PGA Tour, challenge these guys. And I think the way to do that might be golf courses and tinkering with the courses like that. I keep wondering, where's the balance going to be between a tough course and restrictive equipment? You know, are you going to have a ball that doesn't fly as much and make that mandatory? You know, are you going to tone down drivers? You know, when these guys are at 240 yards and hitting five irons, it's like, oh my gosh, how is that even possible? Is it the ball? Is it the club? Is it the weight training that these guys are doing today, the conditioning? They're hitting five irons 240. Well, you know, they're trained to hit five irons close to the pin. So that's not a huge challenge, right? Is it? I don't know. All I know is it was a pleasure to watch these guys have to play golf, kind of like the rest of us.
Yeah, I know. That's why I like it.
You know what I mean?
I know. I just the elements, everything were great yesterday. I loved every minute of that yesterday.
And congratulations to Spahn. That was a terrific effort by him, overcoming five bogeys in his first six holes to win the U.S. Open. That's amazing in and of itself. The Guardians bogeyed five of their – oh, no, they didn't. They just scored five runs in three games. In Seattle, Chris Ossenheimer covers the G's for the Chronicle-Telegram. He's going to join us next, and I'm going to ask him, is there a report that I saw? Trade asset, Shane Bieber. Does that make any sense to anybody? Ossenheimer's next here on The Fan.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.